And welcome to another edition of Zoomed In. I'm the host, Brandon Chapman, and it's a real pleasure to be joined today by Anya Schuftel, who is a research assistant professor of special education. And Anya, I think you've been here about 3 or 4 years at the College of Education, so you'll know the date for when that is, but welcome, first of all, welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Brendan. It's so great to be here on air with you,
We're on air. Scary. I've got the on air sign, in fact, right by, oh, it's a little weird here, right there. I feel like a weather forecaster now, you know, with the green screen. So tell us, I guess first, tell us just a little bit about you, and then we'll talk about your research. But who is this Anya Schuftel?
Right. Who am I? That's a great question, Brendan, right? So a couple things about me. So personally, I'm originally from Russia. So if you all hear an accent, that's where that's from. I've lived in the States for a while, though. So, and then I stutter. So that's my disability. So if you hear that, that's what it is. So that's a personal something. A professional part of me is that I'm a counseling psychologist who is interested in career development for youth with disabilities. In my training as a psychologist and having worked in community with children, families, and adults, and observing the systemic barriers that they encounter with being able to find and maintain work, that's something that I am really passionate about. So that's what I do, and that's something I've been doing since 2010 or thereabouts, and I've been with the college since last January, so not quite a year yet, but I am really honored to think that I've been here for a while. So
yeah, well, I'm so lost with COVID time, I forget to, it was just last year. No, wait, it was the year before COVID, right?
Right.
That's where we're at. Well, I've enjoyed seeing you in the hallways and interacting on email. We've had a few in-person, opportunities to discuss things, but you know how it is. It's a lot of email and Zoom and stuff like that, and that's how we interact nowadays. So it's a definitely a hybrid approach. But you mentioned career development, and I would imagine this post-school transition for youth and young adults that have disabilities. I definitely want to get into that a little more. I found something that I thought was interesting, and this isn't specifically just youth or young adults, but this came from the Bureau of Labor Statistics that had shown a slight rise since the start of COVID in individuals with disabilities that were actively employed. And it had gone up from, 17.9% in 2020 to 19.1% in 2021. So 19%, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think, with the breakdown as they went through and the Bureau had highlighted these things, it was really evident that, there was a slight rise. It's still vastly under where we hope that it will be, right? And not only that, but of those 19%, certainly a lot of them are not having meaningful experiences, right? We want them to also have meaningful experiences like all of us. We want to have, we want to have something meaningful in our life and in our job. So with that, I guess what I'd like to ask you is, can you talk broadly about what that experience might be, the average experience, I guess, for career and post-school for young adults with disabilities? What does it look like? Kind of set the landscape for that.
Absolutely, right? So this topic is near and dear to my heart. So here at WSU, I'm part of the special education faculty. But the projects that I'm working on, the Washington Transition Program and Motivational Enhancement Group Intervention, are really focused on supporting employment for youth and young adults with disabilities, right? So this is what we study. And I'm going to go ahead and zoom out a little bit first, Brendan.
Okay, please. Cool.
And kind of look at the bigger picture, right? So when we think about us as a culture, or as a society, how we understand what the word disability means, and then the stigma that comes with it, right? And so when we think like at the broader cultural or social norms, are we setting up experiences for everybody, including individuals with disabilities, to engage in meaningful employment, or are our ableist biases, are they influencing what we make available to those folks, right? And since we're focusing specifically on disability, that's what I'm going to talk about. And I really love this thought that meaningful employment is extremely important, right? It gives us meaning and social connection, power, right, in our world. And so starting to zoom in and thinking about, okay, so what opportunities are available for young people with disabilities when it comes to employment? Well, we first have to look at schools, right? And so I would say that historically, we were really focused on, okay, like what happens after they graduate high school and how can we support them after high school? But in the recent past, it's become clear that we need to offer those supports in school. And so are we providing experiences for those young people to have opportunities to engage in work, to get feedback, to gain skills, and then to get connected with the other systems like vocational rehabilitation, inclusive post-secondary educational opportunities, or other types of work or meaningful engagement. And I would say that right now there's a huge push to provide those opportunities to the students with disabilities in the high school. So when you look at the federal legislation, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act of 2014, it is aimed at bringing together the systems, so schools and vocational rehabilitation, to support the skill acquisition, the self-advocacy and self-determination skills, work-based experiences for those youth, so then they're set up for success after high school. And so that's what I think you're seeing, right? You're seeing that in the numbers are getting better, but they're not ideal and they're not near as close to where we would like them to be. And so what happens to those young people after high school? I would say that the answer probably would sound different from person to person. From my experience and my expertise, I would say that the young people want to work with disabilities. They want to work. They want to go to school. They want to have a meaningful interaction with their communities and contribute to their communities. It's just that right now, I do think that we have gaps in the services to support that, right? And so when you look at the intersection of multiple identities of people with disabilities, right? So let's say you have an individual with disability and mental health concerns, which is actually not uncommon. Are we addressing the mental health concerns, or is this a gap? And so then that person would fall through the cracks and maybe become unemployed or underemployed, right? And we can look at the intersections of identities of disability and gender identity, right? And we talk a lot about being able to advocate for yourself and all that, but for some folks with those identities, it is just that much harder, right, to go and to talk about who they are and what they need, and then to be able to stay employed, just based right on the cultural and social biases that we encounter. And so I would say what it looks like is that young people want to have jobs, they might be able to secure jobs. It's then are we helping them stay employed and grow in their careers? Not sure if that answered your question.
It was wonderful. I'm looking at it right here. One of the things that I had previously looked at in my research was a report from it was called Solve Long COVID Initiative, mm-hmm. And it was talking about a financial burden that exists because of COVID and on just employment, savings, medical expenses. But one of the things that was brought up, people with at least one disability who are also part of another marginalized group. And you alluded to this with, you know, identity, but disabled people of color or
yes.
Disabled people who are, you know, identify with LGBTQIA2+, mm-hmm. That exacerbates the, you know, already one thing that they're dealing with, right, which is a specific disability or more. You know, they might have more than one disability that they either know about or are still trying to learn, and then you compound that with this where they're feeling marginalized. That gap increases, and that's hard, right? That's hard to deal with. And so how do we help them to, you know, to have this meaningful experience, and also, I mean, have a job in the first place. But I thought that answered that question. I always wonder, like, we have the WC Roar program, and it's received a lot of really good attention, I thought, good focus, and truly, if you think about this, you have a PhD, right? I have a master's degree, and that schooling certainly helped us in our career.
Yes.
And how many young adults that have disabilities, Anya, school was not an option, right? Not because it wasn't an option, because they were told it wasn't an option. And now we seem to have a better understanding that for so many people, maybe not everybody, but for so many people, college is an option, right? And it will help them in that career. And maybe make those more meaningful. I don't know what you think about that.
You know, no, I absolutely do, right? So as a psychologist who is also working in the special education field and thinking about emerging adulthood, and like that's been a big thing in the world of counseling psychology, right? Like that age of going from high school to college, right, and into the upper 20s where there's identity development and values development, strengths, career, all of that, right? Like, I'm not going to go down that trail. But that opportunity to engage in post-secondary education is huge. And I would say, yes, that that right now there is a growing number of inclusive post-secondary education opportunities that are available throughout the country, and ROAR is one of those, right? And so that is really exciting because it just supports human development and career development as part of human development. And so to have the identity as a college student and that experience is huge, to be able to learn skills, to engage in interactions with peers in an inclusive setting is huge. My hope and the trend that I'm seeing is that being able to get the systemic support to expand those opportunities, right? So, right, wouldn't it be wonderful if each university, community college had an inclusive post-secondary program? That my other hope is that those opportunities are available to all young adults with disabilities, kind of going back to this idea of minoritized communities that also have disabilities, so folks of color, for example, right? We know that they historically have been excluded from higher education, right? And again, and then you're exacerbating with having other identities, with looking at how much it costs to attend an inclusive post-secondary education, and making sure that we're opening up those opportunities for all young adults with disabilities, which I believe is happening on the national arena, and my hope is that it will continue to happen.
it is starting to happen. I think you definitely, as an individual and people with whom you collaborate, are helping that to advance. You know, I mentioned Roar, but I want to actually mention, I want to talk about a project that you're working on. And let's start with the WC Rise program or research, and you have a motivational enhancement group intervention that's part of this. But talk about WC Rise or an overview of that, which is the research and innovation in special education. Obviously, we learn things because we research, and if we knew everything already, we wouldn't be researching, right? We don't, and so we're learning as we go, and that research and innovation meaning we're gonna try something, you know, and sometimes it's high risk, high reward. We're gonna try it, and we're gonna think in a way that's different than we have. But it really is about servicing people in the way that we should, because it's the right thing to do, and we're a land grant university, right? We're supposed to be here for everybody. So talk about RISE and. Meggie. I mean, I think that might be how you acronym. Yeah, the Motivational Enhancement Group intervention. But talk about those, because that's something that you're intimately involved in.
Yes. Yes. So RISE, right, is a center that is housing a number of projects that are aimed at supporting transition, the post-school transition for youth and young adults with disabilities. One of the projects that I'm very intimately involved with is Motivational Enhancement Group Intervention. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it is. It's something It's something that I have developed in 2012. And the focus of Meggie is to increase young people's with disabilities self-determination, self-advocacy skills, and to also increase their vocational outcome expectations. We know from research that those who have higher self-determination, self-advocacy tend to have higher vocational outcome expectations, and then that can lead to employment. We can look at a lot of groups, and there's been a lot of research that's been done in the world of counseling psychology with looking at the minoritized groups and looking at how increasing self-determination, self-advocacy, the awareness of the systemic barriers that those folks are encountering, how to be able to influence or interact with those barriers in a way that can lay a path for success, instead of really feeling like that they don't have agency to pursue the goals that they have. Right. So, big topic. I can talk a lot about that. But how do we effectively increase self-determination, self-advocacy, and vocational outcome expectations? Right. So, as a psychologist, I am intimately connected with this intervention called motivational interviewing. And motivational interviewing, at its core, it's a method of communication that increases a person's own motivation to change. So if you think about schools and you think about a classroom, when you're sitting in a classroom, you have somebody who is talking at you a lot of the time and is providing you with information, and there's a time and a place for that, of course. Motivational interviewing does something a little different. It elicits, right? It's asking you, Brendan, questions and using summaries and reflections to get you talking about what you want and how you're going to get there, instead of me saying, right, this is how you're going to do it. So
that increases my autonomy then. That increases my voice, my ability to feel like I have that agency that you mentioned.
Absolutely, right? It increases your autonomy, your competence, and your connection with others. So what Meggie does is that it takes motivational interviewing and it adapts it to a classroom setting. So it is done in a classroom. It's a 12-session You can think about it as a curriculum that walks young people with disabilities through a path of who did you want to be when you were in elementary school? Let's tap into that excitement of having work. To then let's talk about all the skills that you were able to collect along the way up to this point. Talk about your strengths, your values. And then let's talk about what is it that you want to do after high school and how and the steps that you can take toward that starting now. Great. So it's laid out in 12 sessions, but it really lays down this path. It's autonomy. It's your journey. It's competence, because you're talking about your strengths, right, and your skills and how you're going to use them to get the job that you want, and relatedness, because it's done in a group setting, it's done in a classroom setting, and you're getting to know your peers better, you're getting to know your teachers better, right? The other level to Maggie is that it's done by a vocational rehabilitation professional. So then the students start to form a relationship with vocational rehabilitation and are more likely to seek out those services in high school and then after high school as well. So I pilot tested Maggie in Oregon in 2012 and saw that there was a positive impact on self-determination and self-advocacy, vocational outcome expectations, but then also the awareness of the systemic barriers that those young folks encounter. And then Maggie's been used in Oregon as a pre-employment transition service since 2015, and then it's been adopted by Washington in 2020. So right now I'm working with Washington on growing the internal capacity to sustain Maggie in the state.
Yeah, I really like, I mean, all of that resonated, but the self-advocacy, self-determination. I mean, I just went to a conference a little bit ago, and these are not there. Obviously, there will be some people there with disabilities, but others who probably don't have an identified disability. And guess what they were talking about? They were talking about better self-advocacy and self-determination to this group of professionals. How much more than should we be using this, I guess, with students with disabilities? So they know, like, they can hold their ground, right? They can get on the right track. Because Anya, not only getting this job, but making that job, as we've talked about, fulfilling, but being able to climb that ladder. Like, this isn't it, right? It's not like this is the only position that you'll have within a company or organization. I mean, they need to know that they have a chance to get promoted or do a good job or whatever and advance in their own career. So I think this is wonderful.
Absolutely. Well, and thank you, Brendan, right? And to add to that, to be able to ask for what they need, right? Like, that's a huge part of self-advocacy. So to be able to say, hey, this is my disability and this is what I need to be successful, and to also say, and here are my strengths and this is what I'm good at, right?
Yeah.
If we show up to work and we don't let folks know what we are good at and the supports that we need to be successful, it's just not going to work out. We're going to get burned out.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah. When we are able to do that, then we are laying our own path, right? So the other thing is that let's say you show up to work and you say, these are the supports that I need and this is what I'm good at, and the job says, we're not able to provide you with those supports, right? Like, that's huge fear and huge anxiety. The self-determination then comes into this, into saying, okay, this doesn't mean something about me. It means something about that job. I'm going to go and find a job that's a better fit for me and who I am.
Yeah, I love that. I think for too long we've had so many people who are concerned with, let's just get a job, right? So they're not on the dole or you know, a strain on the organization or a strain on the government or whatever. And I just think that's such antiquated thinking. And I really am grateful for people like you and people with whom you work doing this kind of research, but then actually taking that research and sharing that. And by the way, I will share this as part of like the summary that we end up using on YouTube and Vimeo and all that. I'll make sure that the Meggie is that information is there, because there is a really neat infographic that you have that lays out those six different things that are part of their group, their motivational part, especially, and it goes over, I'm looking at right now, evidence-based curriculum and transition planning assistance. It does talk about self-advocacy, self-determination, supporting career development, and flexible facilitation, all of which I think is, all of that's good for anybody, you know, but giving this kind of development to a young student with disabilities, that's just the right thing to do, and I'm grateful that, you know, we have folks like you willing to help with this.
Thank you. And I really do want to emphasize that the way that I look at this work is within the ecological and the systemic context, and that we have a constellation of multiple identities. And so when we talk about disability, we cannot ignore the other identities that those young people hold, and it is a big part of Meggie. It's not just what is your disability or what is it that you want to do. It's who are you as a person? What are the other identities that you hold? So there are conversations about racism and transphobia and ableism and other forms of discrimination that those young people encounter. Because as you said, when we start to look at the outcomes for young people with disabilities who are also people of color, right? Like, so black and brown youth historically has had even worse employment and self-determination outcomes than their peers who, you know, would be identified by the culture as white, right? And so I think it is so important to always acknowledge the complexity of that and not just say we're just supporting this youth or we're just supporting that youth. It's how are we supporting all youth who want to have meaningful employment and who want to have the kind of life that they want to have, whatever that looks like.
In fact, just like anybody else, I mean, if your identity is wrapped into a disability, you'll never find the career that you want. If it's around your affinities and around your talents and passions, and now we can find something that's going to work, I think. I just think that's great. Do you have anything else you would like to add? I'll turn the mic over to you. Time is yours before we close.
We've been chatting for a while. I just really...
That's okay.
Yeah, I just appreciate the opportunity, right? This is my first video cast or whatever this is, so just appreciate the opportunity to ramble on about something that I'm passionate about. Would want to invite anybody who has any questions or want to chat further or has any feedback to get in touch with me, and I assume my contact information will be available, or you can also look me up on the College of Ed website. You'll find my picture and information about me, courtesy of Brendan.
Well, I would say you say rambled on, but I can tell you right now that the passion was evident. If you were dry, boring, I would have cut you off a long time ago.
Thank you.
So there you go. Well, Dr. Anya Scheftel, research assistant professor at the special education here at the College of Education, and Dr. Scheftel, thank you so much for joining me, and have a wonderful day, wonderful week.
You too, Brendan. Again, thanks so much for the opportunity, and you'll have good rest of your day.
Thank you.